Alarm and hoping.
On that note, I want to welcome everybody to the world according to that man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And I always say on that note, because we're quite often having funny conversations beforehand, that I should start recording without telling people and praying nothing is said that can't be aired. But we have some fun conversations.
And I don't think you're going to have a problem with Miss Roth.
It's not Mrs. or Miss Roth that I'm worried about. It's Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I really want to thank
as well you may be.
I want to remind everybody, benstein.substack.com. We got a ton of questions this week.
Let's plunge right in.
Let me do a little introductions first.
This woman needs a lot of introductions. She's had a hell of a career for a very young woman.
100%. That's a great introduction. But I also want to remind everybody, thanks for downloading, everybody, this week. It's been one of our best down. The past month has been the best download month. And we don't do any advertisements, so go figure.
We don't have any money, so that's why we don't do any advertisements.
It's all Ben Stein. So let's just get right through it. I want to welcome the Rumblers, the Ranters. And remember, everybody, go to rumble.com, subscribe to our channel. It's slow and steady. We're creaking up there, not like we were on YouTube before we got a few X's on our name and a little band for a little bit. But we rumble on. We're joined tonight by Carol Roth. She, Wharton School of Business, right? Correct?
Undergrad,
best-selling author, TV presenter, a whole slew of things. But one of my favorite things, and I bring this up with Ben often times, I miss dearly the Fox Sunday lineup, Saturday lineup. I miss, obviously, Ben used to be on Cavuto, on Business. And you were on Bulls and Bears. And I think it's really important in today's day and age, Ben Stein. Oh, I forgot to introduce Ben. He's an economist, he's a lawyer, he's a professor of law and economics, former presidential speechwriter, game show host, actor, investment banker, of course, America's humble servant.
And lots of stuff, but that's not important. Doctor.
But
the only thing that counts is tonight is money.
Ben Stein, so I watched your shows a lot. And me being the news person I am, you know, finance romance isn't my avenue in any way, but I would enjoy getting like an hour and a half a respite from the world. And Fox News took that away. They took away this 30 minutes where you're supposed to, where the banter is fun. And I just want to thank you both for that. And Ben, you know how much I love you, obviously, on Fox and Friends. But right to it, Ben, I just have to share this. I was in a... I was in an Uber the other day, as you all know, and in California, the price of gas is about $6.30, $6.40, and the Uber driver was sharing with me that Uber gives him 45 cents off per ride. But if you have a long ride, that's not much of a... And he was sharing with me, and Carol's a small business person, and an Uber driver really is a small business owner. And he was sharing with me the absolute struggles that he's having right now riding around in Uber. And during the pandemic, people were tipping a lot more. And he was doing extremely well, Ben. But a lot of people don't have the extra cash right now to do that tipping. And he, as a small business owner, this Uber driver is really struggling, Ben.
Well, we're in an extremely prosperous period. Extremely wildly prosperous, almost unbelievably prosperous. So I'm not sure why people don't have enough money to tip them. Sounds to me like they're just being cheap. But obviously, if one of the major inputs to his costs is gasoline, he's going to have problems. And they're entirely caused by President Biden taking away fracking. Totally unnecessary, a complete slap in the face of American industry and in terms of American energy independence. It was probably as bad an idea as there has ever been. It had no rational purpose behind it. The idea that it's going to genuinely affect the longevity of man on Earth is preposterous. And he was just persuaded into it by a group of extremely ignorant and confused human beings.
What say you, Carol?
Yeah, I mean, this is an economic and a national security issue, one that was completely avoidable. This was the first thing that he did when he came into office, is he canceled the oil and gas leases, he canceled the Keystone Pipeline. But the other thing that he did, and I think Ben was alluding to this, is he's kowtowing to this group of advocates for ESG. And for people who don't know what ESG is, environmental, social, and governance, basically criteria, where the people who say that they're smart and they know what's going on, instead of letting the market decide what's in the best interest of shareholders, they're trying to push their agenda. And one of the things that they've done is they've kept the banks from investing in natural gas and oil projects, which has exacerbated this problem and created this issue. And if we don't turn that around, I mean, it is going to continue to move in a very scary direction, because the energy inputs goes into everything that we do. And it's not just the cost that's affecting the small business owner, but it really goes into things like farming. There's talks about potential for global famine right now because of these ridiculous political decisions.
Well, there's a kind of input-output misfit here that is never talked about, which is presumably, and I believe this is something that our president has talked about, people should go out and buy electric cars. But where does the power come from to generate the electricity that goes into these cars? I mean, the electricity just doesn't come out of thin air.
Are you sure?
It doesn't come out of some miracle, right? I'm sure. It has to come out of burning something that propels turbines that then generate electricity that then go down a long wire into the whatever kind of tank it is, what kind of reservoir it is that holds the electricity for a car. The calculation of whether or not that is an economical way to produce electricity or produce energy or motion is an extremely complicated one. I am morally certain, I bet my last dime, that Mr. What is our president's name? Biden has not made that calculation, nor has anyone on his staff. But electricity is not free. And the idea is that electricity you get when you plug your car in, it comes from nowhere and does not hurt anyone. It's crazy. And the idea that burning gasoline hurts people, especially while India and China are building coal-fired electricity producing facilities, is just idiotic.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I heard that our president's name was Brandon, so I'm going to just go with that one. And I thought that we were burning unicorn farts to make the electricity. That's what I had heard as well. But there is another supply-demand imbalance, and Ben is alluding to this as well. There are inputs, there are commodities that go into producing electricity that we are so far behind on that we can't even meet the demand today, let alone this projection to get us off of natural gas. I mean, it's preposterous. Things like copper, things like aluminum, things like nickel, which again happen to be in these other areas of the world that have had significant underinvestment. There's no way we're going to be able to make that transition anytime in the near future based on the supply and demand metrics. And that is a huge piece of the problem. If you want to go in this direction, that's fine. You can start to bring it on board, but don't handicap us at the same time that you're trying to make this transition. It's insanity.
Well, there is also another fact, which is that some of these ingredients that you're mentioning come from places that are not always friendly to the United States of America or to Western or democratic countries in general. So that the idea that lithium, nickel, other inputs, other natural resources, all come from Canada, which we seem to be trying to make into an enemy anyway, that's nonsense too. So rather than let the market handle this and figure this out, we are trying to let a group of pointy-headed intellectuals in Washington, who, by the way, are not that pointy-headed. I've been one of them. Very few are very intellectual. It's just preposterous. I mean, we have this incredibly, unbelievably efficient system called the free market that can make all these calculations, and we are just smashing it on the head with a hammer.
Okay, so from Gene, Gene KK, hello from Glendale, Missouri. I love watching your world. My money question is this: are precious metals still a useful part of an investment portfolio. Please speak to the issues surrounding those commodities. Thank you.
Well, I go along with my idol, Warren Buffett, and say that if you're going to have precious metals as part of your part of your portfolio, it should be a small part. And that the I my own little self greatly prefer productive inputs like factories and farms rather than precious metals. Although precious metals have a place, there's no doubt in my mind that precious metals have a place simply because people are used to their having a place, and it's just part of man's nature, I think, to like gold. But in terms of their ability to produce income and produce wealth, there's an awful lot of there are an awful lot of questions to be answered. And as I have often said, if Mr. Buffett doesn't like it, I don't like it.
What's well said, and what say you, Carol?
So I think it depends how you're approaching your portfolio, and obviously everybody's coming at it from a different set of objectives. But as a hedge on against what is going on, or as a bet that we're going to be pushed into this ESG arena, I do think that supply and demand imbalance, you can make an argument that because we have underinvested in the supply of so many of these things and they are trying to push them, that there is some value there. The other thing on gold is you'll notice that central banks around the world have been loading up on gold and their reserves.
That's a very, very widely distributed activity. I mean, there's some who are buying a lot and some are buying either none or almost none.
Yeah. So, but I would say, in terms of if you're thinking things are really going to go south, you would actually need to own physical gold, something that if you like, you're somebody who's concerned that the dollar is going away, something that's traded on an ETF that's backed by dollars isn't going to be helpful to you. So those are just some data points.
It's really funny. There. I just got to say a story. Ben and I used to know a person, Ben and Judy used to know a person who used to work for Ben for years, who picked him up at the airport for years, and Al. And we haven't heard from Al. And Al used to talk about God rest his soul. And he had literally gold. And every time he would see us, he would talk about the stacks of gold bars that he had in his apartment or his condo complex. God rest his soul. Ben, if you could humbly just spread your head, just perfect. Thank you so much. thank you, Ben.
Let me go back to what Carol said. I'm a lot older than Carol, and I have been hearing people say that if their things go south, that gold is going to be what you're going to be looking for. But if things go really south, like if we go to nuclear war, then you're not going to need to worry about your gold assets. But I have been hearing people say that the dollar is going to disappear as a main store of value in the world for so long. It's simply insane. And the people who have bet against the dollar as a very valuable part of a portfolio, I think, have come to regret it. Obviously, gold has had some phenomenal movements in the last many decades. But the idea that it's going to replace the dollar, I think, has been floated for an awfully long time, and it has not happened.
But the only thing I will say just in response to that is, in terms of our financial position, our balance sheet position as a country, we're in a very different position today than we were, at the time when you were growing up and hearing this from, previously. So, maybe debt to GDP was at 40% or 60%. Now we're at 120, 130%. It's a different scenario. I'm not saying that this is going to happen tomorrow. I'm just saying that the calculation, the discussion points are probably different today than they were previously.
Well, with the greatest respect, Carol, to your obvious intelligence and articulation ability, I'm not sure why the U.S. having a higher debt to GDP ratio is an advertisement for gold. It might just as well be an advertisement for wheat.
Yeah, I mean, again, these are just some of the theories that are floated out there. Obviously, we're not going to be able to, and it's not, by the way, just the U.S. central bank and central banks around the world. We're not going to be able to just write off all of our debt. But there has been some discussions or floating out there that perhaps maybe there is a write-up of gold at some point, and that's one of the reasons why central banks have been.
You think we're going to go back to having a currency which is backed by gold, and we're going to say all of a sudden gold is worth X amount per ounce, and therefore we're going to be able to pay off our debt with the amount of gold we have at Fort Knox?
Yeah, I don't think it's exactly like that. I'm just saying in terms of the global central banking system, I see a scenario where there isn't necessarily one dominant reserve currency, and gold is potentially used more for settlement. We have sort of the U.S. and North America kind of contingency. There's a European contingency, and then there's probably kind of a China and some of these other, kind of shady folks contingency that perhaps are using different mechanisms. And there isn't just one, for example, with oil, that it's not going to be everything settled in the dollar. And we're seeing some movement away from that.
Okay, let me jump in quickly because Ben Stein is actually a proponent of gold. He is a spokesperson for Gold Co.
I'm a spokesperson for having some of it. Right. I don't think it's going to replace the dollar anybody on the screen's lifetime.
There's nothing I hope that you're more right about than that.
Okay, next question is from Margaret Davis, and this is actually a very good question. You're not ignorant, Margaret. There's a difference between ignorant and not knowing. Why can an American consumer choose to buy American if it's clothing, vehicles, or food, but not fuel? That's actually a very interesting question. We obviously know we do make gasoline in our country, and it would be interesting to know what stations used where the gasoline was coming from.
That'd be interesting if you're crazy. I mean, I mean, who cares where it comes from? But why do we care where it comes from? I mean, if we want to invest in America I assume that the question is in a good faith, a great, wonderful, patriotic America, and God bless her soul. And she's a wonderful, wonderful human being. And I just love the fact that that's on her mind. I think it's fabulous. But she can donate to disabled American veterans. She can donate to handicapped veterans. She can donate to all kinds of many, many wonderful TAPS, which is the best of them all, which helps the families of men and women killed in the wars against terrorism. There are many great ways to contribute to people who protect and preserve America. I don't think labeling gasoline is one of them, but I may be wrong. It's certainly an interesting idea.
To buy American. I mean, Carol, I just think it's an interesting question. Why everything we know where it comes from except our oil?
It's probably because it's a commodity, and usually in commodities there isn't a lot of differentiation. It's kind of viewed as the same.
They're called commodities,
right? Exactly. But I'm putting it out for our viewer. That's the piece of it where something that's branded, having the Made in America tag, is a point of differentiation for that product. So when you're going to get gas, you're usually getting it at the place that's the cheapest or the most convenient to you. You're not looking for differences in the grade of it because it's a commodity. So I'm assuming that's why they probably have never, thought to go that route with it.
Okay, so next.
What about steel or rice or bread? They don't go as a source of it in any of these things. I suppose you could do that, but I have to say, with the greatest respect to the kind person who wrote in about this, and I think we all want to be patriotic, and I want to support this incredibly wonderful gift from God called the United States of America. There are many, many more efficient ways of doing it.
Okay, next up, Phil. Hello from highly regulated New Jersey. What do I do with my IRA at 59 years old? I really don't know where to invest it.
Well, I don't either, but I always say a highly diversified index of common stocks for the greater most part of it, and some in cash. And I used to say some in bonds, but the inflation picture is so dismal that unless you're buying in treasury inflation adjusted bonds, I'd stay away from bonds. But the common stocks, excuse me, I beg your pardon, highly diversified indexes, that's what Mr. Buffett recommends. Again, I'll take his advice and be very grateful for it.
What about you, Carol?
Yeah, so again, a disclaimer, this is not financial advice, just information for you to look into, because they have like weird regulations around giving financial advice. But I tend to agree, it's very difficult to be a stock picker. And I think there are, you know, some things that you can do to hedge a little bit. But, you know, something like the S&P 500, there was a piece, I think it was in the Journal today, where they were showing the balance sheet strength of the S&P 500 companies.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal on Sundays?
Online. We do everything online. So we just go in and look at, you know.
Okay, that's great. That's wonderful. That's great.
I think Ben's asking because he didn't get his today.
No.
But what I was going to say is, you know, what they were showing is because these companies are so flush with cash, they're using a lot of that to buy back stock and to give you dividends. And so a combined return from stock buyback and dividends is already giving you, forget about stock appreciation, several percentage points. And I think you're going to see that trend continue. So having owning the broader market is something that probably makes sense to look into as part of a diversification strategy.
Which is something, one of my favorite things.
We love it.
Sorry, go ahead, Ben.
No, we love that.
Yeah, great. And one of my favorite things, I always, at the end of every show in Cavuto on Business, they would constantly try to get Ben to pick a stock, and Ben would always say the boring answer, which is the S&P and the Dow. And had people listened to him for the better part of 25 or 30 years, they'd be loaded if they had made their investments listening to Ben Stein. It's not glamorous, but it makes, but
set
in the long term,
what did you say, Carol?
Set it and forget it, like Ron Popeil used to say, right?
You know something? Ron Popeil was a friend. He lived near me. I saw him at lunch at the Beverly Hills Hotel restaurant right next to the swimming pool. And he and I had some laughs. And 2 days later, he was dead. And I must say, Ron Popeil was a great guy. That's all. Sorry, don't mean to.
He was an icon. He really was.
He was absolutely. And the reason this is really important is because people don't have people to go to for these questions. And people are scared that they're going to be called stupid or ignorant.
Yes.
And here's the thing, ask the questions and keep asking us the questions. Because somebody wrote, upon retirement account, which account would you recommend starting withdrawals from? A qualified IRA or a brokerage account? And I'm not sure if people here are qualified to answer that. I don't even know that.
Well, I know that there's a law about it. So, I mean, there's a law that says you have to start withdrawing a certain amount from your IRAs at a certain age. There's to some extent the element of discretion has been removed, but I think within that constraint, the least you can withdraw, the less you can withdraw, the better. And that's just a simple amount. And also, the more you can leave in stocks, I think, the better. But yeah. I could be totally wrong about that. That's, as I say, stock picking is not my line.
Yeah, so obviously I'm a Roth. The Roth IRA was not named for me, although a lot of people ask me that question.
Can I tell you? Julia Louise Dreyfus.
Yeah.
Right, she comes from the Dreyfus Fund.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so you never.
But
know.
I do not come from the Roth IRA.
So you never know.
My maiden name was 12 letters, so I willed a 4-letter last name and I manifested it. But I'm not related to the IRA people. But what I will say, I think that Ben makes a very valid point, because you do have these legal rules that you have to withdraw from your IRA. You can just take that, withdraw because you have to and you don't want to incur a penalty, and then move that into your brokerage account. So you don't have to actually, you know, take that money and do, you just have to take it out of that one particular account for it to be unfortunately a taxable event if it's a traditional IRA, but you can move that and then you can rebuy the S&P 500 or whatever stocks that you had it in previously.
And I must say, my hat is off to anyone who has sufficient self-restraint to be able to do such things. So God bless them.
Okay, so somebody asked a very interesting question because there are a lot of people on fixed incomes. And somebody asked, they're surviving Biden on a fixed income, which I would imagine now, if you have a fixed income, is extremely hard with the gas prices, with inflation. And we know that it's the average family is spending at least $300 extra a month, Ben.
I did not know that, but if you say it, I'll believe it.
Yes, that is an actual statistic that the average family cost, Carol,
Okay.
could probably.
Yes, correct. I've seen that too.
And it's gone up from $100 in 2000, for it was $100 in 2000, in 2021 to close to $300 now. But the bigger point, Ben, is people are on a fixed income. And the name of tonight's show, I actually named it, is I'll put, tw can I have $20 in number seven? Because another thing I've been doing is I've been going into gas stations, and of course, this is anecdotal data, and I've been asking them how many people are actually filling up their tanks compared to
Oh,
people
yes.
people giving $30 or $40. And they said it's at least 50 to 60% of people are not filling up their tanks. These are from the three stations I went to.
That's a that well, of course, that's valueless, but it's valueless but interesting. And I must say, those people set a very low value on their time.
They also don't have a lot of money. I mean,
No,
people.
it's not. They're not going to save any money by doing
No,
that.
but Ben, people that live paycheck to paycheck don't have, if you could make it through $40 this week, and
Yeah.
that's what, Carol, people are asking themselves and
Okay.
questioning themselves right now. And just in my humble opinion, forget about the
Of
fact that
course.
everybody's got every streaming service known to man, that they won't cut, Carol.
No, but it's a difficult time, and my heart goes out to Americans because, this was not something that they signed up for. Certainly not the last 2 years, and certainly not, what's happened with inflation. It's been an epic, a historic transfer of wealth from Main Street to Wall Street. The people who are in tech companies and who own stocks and who own assets have seen their wealth increase, and the people who are spending are seeing the value of their dollar not being able to stretch as far. So obviously, it really depends on the individual. If you're somebody who has any sort of an adjustable rate debt, you want to get that fixed as quickly as possible because that rate's going to continue to go up. And if there's a way
Well,
for
you
you
are a smart woman if you can predict that with any degree of confidence. I'm impressed.
Well, the way things are trending, I would certainly be locking that in.
Okay.
I also think that, to the extent that there's anything that you can prepay for that will still be there and that you need, that's a good way to lock in prices today too, because given the way that inflation is trending, I don't think it's going to get any cheaper. Perhaps eventually we'll get relief in certain categories, but given the amount of money printing, given the disruptions in the supply chain and the labor market, it does seem to be going that way. But anything, go through your budget. Anything that you absolutely don't need to be spending on, I'd be cutting that out now, trying to hang on to as much as you can, prepay if you can, because those prices are going up. And God bless everybody.
I think those is sage
God
advice.
bless everybody is a very, very wonderful wish. It's interesting, Carol. I would say that another gigantic, stupendous transfer has been from people who do not have real estate to those who do have real estate. And my
Correct.
heart goes out to people who rent because they are really in a very difficult
Amen. I wish
position.
we had
And
more time because there was actually a study this week where there's a ton of people are having buyer's remorse of the p
What?
of yes of a lot of the people that bought during the pandemic. Instead of renting, they didn't allocate enough funds for things that could go wrong with a house. There was a whole story about it this week. It's actually something that we could get into
Boy,
because
do I know that's right. But I must go.
Well, you
I've
must go.
got
Hold on a second. We have to thank Carol Roth for
Oh,
being
yes.
here. Carol,
I want to know what her original 12-syllable name was.
12 letters. So I was originally Schneiderman, and I told all of my friends in
Well,
high school
that's not a very,
I was going to marry
that's
someone with a four-letter last name, and so I'm
that
Carol
is,
Roth.
that is not, that is not a, Schneiderman is not a very complicated name.
No, but it's 12 letters. Who wants to be a Schneiderman? Who wants to be Carol Schneiderman?
And Carol, how do people find you? How do people find you?
At Twitter, at Carol J.S. Roth.
There you are. And of course, you can find us at benstein.substack.com. Carol, you're great.
You're absolutely great.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
And that's the whole point in this show, is that we have discourse and we have different ideas. And
I think we should. I don't think we had very different ideas. And I would hope we could do this very, very frequently.
Carol, you are welcome back anytime.
I'm really, really, really happy to do this.
It's a very rare
thing. It was an honor and a privilege for me. And I hope to rejoin again.
Ben Stein asked you for a second date right away. he went against the rules. Okay, I want to thank everybody that's been listening. I want to thank everybody that's been downloading. I want to thank Ben Stein, spectator.org. Of course, benstein.substack.com, where everybody keeps on signing up. It's been great, and thank you for the responses. God bless America. God bless you all. Ben, take us out with some sage advice.
Buy, if you possibly can, buy either a portfolio of common stocks or a house, but please save and start saving at a very young age.
Can I give one more thing? Can I say one more thing? I think sure. Since Carol's in Chicago, I think every week when we do a finance show about life, you should pay a little homage to John Hughes and that little line of his, which everybody could heed the advice from Ben.
What you mean, which is to say life goes by pretty quick. If you don't stop and look around, you just might miss it. And that is some of the best advice in the world.
God bless you all. God bless America. We will see you Tuesday night.
Carol, thank you very, very much. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.